It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The UN calls for more urgent help to battle worsening malnutrition and rising infection rates in flood-ravaged Pakistan. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The United Nations says it now needs $800 million to battle against what it calls a second wave of death and destruction in Pakistan. The new fundraising target is five times higher than originally requested, and it comes as doctors work around the clock to reach tens of thousands in need of urgent medical care to treat malnourished children and those suffering from a worsening outbreak of waterborne diseases. The BBC's Regini Vaidyanathan takes us now to one of the hardest-hit provinces in the country's southeast.
Well, our morning starts at a school in the district of Shahid Benazirabad. It's a school that is still operational after the floods, but actually some parts of it have now also been taken over by the district health office.
Next to a classroom of young children is where we meet Dr. Amara Goha.
Since 1 month, they are completely cut off. Because there is no any source of communication, signals are not here, roads are also, you know, not working. In case of emergency, they cannot move to hospitals or anywhere else.
Well, for these doctors, travelling by boat is the only way to reach some villages which have been completely cut off in these floods. And so we're travelling on this wooden boat with a group of doctors. The boat's also been loaded up with various medicines.
Dr. Amara and her group of government doctors are being supported by UNICEF.
Well, one of the biggest challenges is access.
Adarsh Lagari is from UNICEF.
We have, of course, a medical crisis, and then is the food insecurity crisis, because as you can see, there is water everywhere. It hasn't receded. It'll take months to go entirely away.
The lake we traverse was once the land these villagers lived off. Now, having swallowed their crops, it's a stagnant water body where mosquitoes multiply, and a breeding ground for disease. A tannoy announces to the village that the doctors are ready.
Villagers are streaming towards this camp now, many of them women with young children.
A nurse wraps a tape around nine-month-old Saima's tiny arm. It moves to the red area of the scale, showing that Saima's arm is perilously thin and she's malnourished.
There are so many people like this baby. It is very difficult for us also and for mothers also, as there is shortage of clean water and food supplies.
And a shortage of boats and doctors to carry out this work, which means Dr. Amara and others can't reach every cut-off community.
If we do not provide our extra facilities to them, they cannot survive.
And that's the biggest worry. People here say they're not getting enough help from the government. The government says it needs more help from the rest of the world. The scale of this disaster is clear. The solution, less so.
That's the BBC's Regini Vaidyanathan reporting from Pakistan's Sindh province there. Back in the UK, the charity Fair Share, which redistributes surplus food, is asking major supermarkets and individual brands to increase their contributions. That's because it says it's experienced a drop in donations at the same time demand is surging. The BBC's Coletta Smith has more on that story.
Supermarkets are trying to keep prices low for their customers and cut food waste to meet environmental targets. But achieving these aims is having an unexpected consequence. Fair Share, which collects surplus food from shops and manufacturers and redistributes it to thousands of food banks and community kitchens, has seen a big drop in contributions. Surplus donations from supermarket supply chains have been falling through the summer and are now around a quarter lower than the same period last year. The charity's hoping to make up the difference and meet increased demand by getting more donations from smaller retailers, manufacturers or restaurants.
That's Coletta Smith reporting there. A rally in global stock markets is continuing across Europe and Asia this morning. As we check the numbers now, benchmarks in Paris and Frankfurt are up in the 2.6 to 3% range at this hour. Here in London, the FTSE 100 is up 1.7%. Investors say it's a sign of relief after yesterday's U-turn by the British government on controversial unfunded tax cuts and a smaller than expected rate rise today from Australia's central bank. Fresh data this hour, though, showed producer prices in the 19-country eurozone surged more than 43%. In the year to September. Investors hope figures like these could lead global central banks to tame their more hawkish rate hike plans to ease economic malaise. Meanwhile, Tokyo's Nikkei closed up 3% today following Wall Street's Monday's gains. That's despite North Korea's decision to fire a ballistic missile over Japan for the first time in 5 years. It's a move that's received strong international condemnation. The BBC's Mariko Oi explains, though, why there hasn't been a strong and swift financial market reaction yet.
The market and people have somewhat become rather immune to it, if you like. And as a result, the stock market ending today almost 3% higher and defense shares doing extremely well. But it was interesting, though, to see the currency market because the Japanese yen strengthened immediately after it was confirmed that North Korea fired this missile. Because despite this is the fifth one in a week, this one is quite different because it flew over Japan, which is the first time in 5 years. And as a result, traders took note of it and the yen strengthened against the US dollar because it is still seen as a safe haven currency despite its recent weakness because of the difference in interest rates between Japan and the United States. But then when traders realized that there was not much damage, then the market started to calm down. So now the Japanese yen is quite calm as well. But it was just interesting because 10 days ago, the Bank of Japan intervened trying to prop up the value of the yen, and that didn't really work, but you know, immediately after this North Korean missile, you actually saw exactly what they actually wanted in the currency market.
This missile launch from North Korea comes as Japan is actively working to speed up its defense capabilities. And the government back in August outlined ambitious plans for record defense spending. How is that going? Do you think this escalation will spur the Japanese government to rubber stamp those plans?
It's an interesting question because, as you know, Mr. Abe, the Japan's longest-serving prime minister's state funeral took place just last week, and that was quite unpopular. So as a result, the current administration of Fumio Kishida, it's really unpopular at the moment among the Japanese public. And increasing defense spending isn't without any controversy, especially among the Japanese public. So whether or not they would go ahead with it because of this North Korean missile remains to be seen. Having said that, I think when the Japanese government talked about it, they were thinking about Ukraine, obviously invaded by Russia, the rise of China, what's going to happen in Taiwan. People weren't exactly talking about North Korea. And as our correspondents have been saying, you know, this is North Korean way of saying, hey, we're still here. Don't forget about us. And by this missile flying over Japan, it definitely got noticed by not just politicians, but also the Japanese public who started talking about how this could be a real threat that could actually affect their day-to-day life. So we'll see if this kind of incident may change the public's opinions, but so far, not really.
The BBC's Mariko Oi for us. Thanks for breaking this down.
Thank you.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.